Good evening. If you'd like to turn to John chapter 18. John chapter 18, there's a couple of verses I'll read there to start us off. I'm very glad to be here. Very glad to see everybody. Glad to see everyone here in the congregation. Of course, my parents, and glad to see Natty and Papa coming out to be with us. And I just appreciate the opportunity to speak from God's Word, and I hope that this will be, you know, helpful to all of us. John chapter 18, we'll begin reading in verse 37. This is a little bit of context, although I think we'll gather it pretty quickly. This is after Jesus has already been turned over to Pilate, and now judgment is pending. And this is the end of their conversation in verse 37. Then Pilate said to him, that is Jesus, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" You see, in response to such a grand statement from Jesus about himself and where he came from and what he came to do, Pilate just asked a question: "What is truth?" About 2 years ago, so it would have been 2020, around this time, at the congregation we go to, I started preaching a series of sermons that all began with this verse. And the concept I was getting at was, and I'll get to it, but I'm still getting at it today, but the concept I was getting at then was, there have been times in the past, and even now, we might look at that question, "What is truth?" and think, what a dumb question. Truth is truth. Truth is something that's true, that's kind of implied. It's something you know. It's something that can't really be disputed. But the point I made then, again, 2 years ago, that was right in the middle of COVID really being at a peak. A lot of us had gone to having virtual services, and then if you're here, you're not here as often. You're seated, spread apart. You're wearing masks. And then you turn on the news or you listen to your neighbors and everybody's debating, this makes no sense. We shouldn't be doing this. I think it's this. And then, you know, there's all this conspiracy. Where did it come from? Was it deliberate? Is it Bill Gates? All kinds of stuff. People just debating back and forth as to what's going on. And even from a political standpoint, there are a lot of things going on then too that it's like nobody could really confidently say what was going on, what was true. Now, as you can probably guess, here I am 2 years later. Nothing's really changed, has it? Maybe, in the sense, that specific context, COVID. I mean, here we are. We're all here. We're not wearing masks. We're not doing this virtually. But the concept of people being wrapped up in confusion, uncertain what's true. I mean, even now, it seems like an election can't take place without somebody disputing the results of it. The war going on in Ukraine. I mean, there's all sorts of conspiracy theories and people that believe, well, what's going on? You know, it used to be a war happened. You could pretty confidently say, and everybody would agree, this person, I mean, all wars bad, of course, but for the most part could pretty easily say, you know, this side over here I'm more aligned with. Now, it's all over the place. We're still in a state of confusion. But the interesting thing is, of course, that's nothing new. Because look at here what Pilate was saying 2,000 years ago. What is truth? That's been true throughout all time. There have been things that confuse us, that make us uncertain, that make us feel unstable, that frustrate us, that seem like it should be simple to have an answer to. And yet we're still sometimes struggling with something so fundamental as Pilate's question. What is truth? And so, the idea that I have is we can spend all our time chasing after those things. We can spend all our time trying to sort out the truth on different subjects, like some of the ones that I just mentioned. But I find it sometimes better, instead of trying to hunt down these ghosts and figure out the truth in certain contexts, what if we just set all of that aside and focus rather on truths that are definitely objective, that no matter what happens in this world, no matter what we find, no matter what we may be confused on. Like I said, back to the context originally, was on COVID. Yeah, none of us knew what was going on there. So let's set all of that aside and let's take time to look at some things that are absolutely always true no matter what. And the one I want to talk about this evening is the fact that we can always trust God. If you would, turn to Psalm 62. Psalm 62. Psalm 62 and verse 8. Trust in Him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before Him. God is a refuge for us. And this is the truth, the thing that's concrete, the thing that's always true that I want us to think about for the remainder of this sermon. The fact that we can trust in God at all times because God is our refuge. We've surely heard all this, but all means all. It's all times, whether good, whether bad, whether in a state of confusion and chaos or state of peace and stability. At all times, we can trust God. But I'm going to try and simplify it and basically split this sermon into two categories. We can always trust God in both of these moments, but I want to talk about the fact that we can always trust God in good times, and we can always trust God in bad times. And with one minor exception, we're actually going to spend the entirety of our time together in the Psalms. Because, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, so many of the Psalms express such a strong trust, faith, absolute, unwavering confidence in God and what He's done. Even in the absolute worst of times, we'll look at some of those. But I think the Psalms are a great place to go to understand how we can truly trust God at all times. So that's where we're going to stay. Again, one minor exception from the Proverbs later. We're going to stay in the Psalms and talking about trusting God. So let's first talk about trusting God in the good times. If you would, turn to Psalm 21. And each of these Psalms we'll read in their entirety to just get the full message of the writer. Most of them are David, but there's a couple that are not from David. This one is a Psalm of David, though. Psalm 21. O Lord, in your strength the king rejoices, and in your salvation how greatly he exalts. You have given him his heart's desire, and have not withheld the request of his lips. For you meet him with rich blessings. You set a crown of fine gold upon his head. He asked life of you, you gave it to him. Length of days forever and ever. His glory is great through your salvation. Splendor and majesty you bestow on him. For you make him most blessed forever. You make him glad with the joy of your presence. For the king trusts in the Lord. And through the steadfast love of the Most High, he shall not be moved. Your hand will find out all your enemies. Your right hand will find out those who hate you. You will make them as a blazing oven when you appear. The Lord will swallow them up in his wrath, and fire will consume them. You will destroy their descendants from the earth, and their offspring from among the children of man. Though they plan evil against you, though they devise mischief, they will not succeed. For you will put them to flight. You will aim at their faces with your bows. Be exalted, O Lord, in your strength. We will sing and praise your power. If you just go through each of these things that David is saying, I mean, this is a period of time the king's got it made. Nothing at all to worry about. The first six verses talk about you've not withheld the request of his lips. You've given him his heart's desire. He's been given everything, length of days forever and ever. And if you jump to the latter half of the psalm, it even talks about enemies that may come later, hard times that may come later. God's going to take care of that too. Though they plan evil, they will not succeed. David's not worried about anything right now. His current state, king's been given everything. Future state, doesn't have to worry anything about anything. God is going to take care of it. And there's a reason why. Sandwiched right in the middle of all of this is the key to why it is David can say these things. Verse 7, the king trusts in the Lord. Through the steadfast love of the Most High, he shall not be moved. In the best of times, David is still making a point to remember the only reason this is happening. It's not because David's just lucky. It's not because David's just going through a good period now. It's not certainly through his own might and his strength and his wisdom. All of these things are on account of one simple fact. He trusts in the Lord. The same is true for us. Whenever things are going well, we still have to remember God. And we still have to remember that's why we have all of those good things and why we don't have to worry about the future for the same reason that David did. It's because of trust in God and because of His steadfast love. So during good times, we must remember that. trust in God. And that's the only reason why we have all those things. If you would turn to another psalm, Psalm 49. As I kind of alluded to there, during good times, there could be the temptation to forget where it comes from. There could be the temptation to think it's us. Or maybe even the temptation to think it's just luck, it's just coincidence, or it's just a good phase right now. And not properly giving credit to God. Not properly looking to God and remembering that it's through trust in Him and love from Him that those things happen. And yet I think another problem we may sometimes run into, and during good times, we can't really properly enjoy it because we're too concerned about what might happen. Too concerned about things there on the outskirts that seem to possibly be encroaching upon how good things are going. And David talks about that as well. Actually, the sons of Korah, I said there's a couple that weren't David. The sons of Korah here in Psalm 49 talk about that. About how, you know, you may have problems looming on the outskirts, but we can still have trust in God and not allow us to lose sight of that. Psalm 49. Hear this, all people. Give ear, all inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor together. My mouth shall speak wisdom. The meditation of my heart shall be understanding. I will incline my ear to a proverb. I will solve my riddle to the music of the lyre. Why should I fear in times of trouble, when the iniquity of those who cheat me surrounds me? Those who trust in their wealth and boast of the abundance of their riches. Truly, no man can ransom another or give to God the price of his life, for the ransom of their life is costly and can never suffice. And he should live on forever and never see the pit. For he sees that even the wise die. The fool and the stupid alike must perish and leave their wealth to others. Their graves are their homes forever. Their dwelling places to all generations. Though they called lands by their own names. Man and his pomp will not remain. He is like the beasts that perish. This is the path of those who have foolish confidence. Yet after them people approve of their boast. Like sheep they are appointed for Sheol. Death shall be their shepherd, and the upright shall rule them in the morning. Their form shall be consumed in Sheol, with no place it to dwell. But God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol, for he will receive me. Be not afraid when a man becomes rich, when the glory of his house increases. For when he dies, he will carry nothing away. His glory will not go down after him. For though while he lives, he counts himself blessed, and though you will get praise when you do well yourself, his soul will go to the generation of his fathers, who will never again see light. Man in his pomp, yet without understanding, is like the beasts that perish. Now, on one hand, this psalm might seem out of place. Like, isn't this talking about bad times, and I'm talking about trusting God in the good times? It could seem that way, but I'm actually inclined to think when you're reading this, usually the Psalms, whether it's David or the sons of Korah or others, when they're in a bad place, when they're having a very difficult time, there's this crying out to God to save them, to help them, to deliver them. This, however, you don't really see all of that. You kind of see this person's in their place, things are going well because they know God's with them, and in verse 5 they're saying, why should I fear in times of trouble, when the iniquity of those who cheat me surrounds me? Maybe there are things on the outskirts. Maybe there are things happening that aren't good. But as of now, this person is not shaken by it. They're not concerned about it. And the reason why they're not concerned about it is there in verse 15. God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol, for he will receive me. In light of that, This writer is saying nothing else matters. It doesn't really matter what's going on. As he continues on there, verse 16, don't be afraid when a man becomes rich, when the glory of his house increases. He'll die and carry nothing away. The point of this psalm, and the reason why I wanted to read it, is sometimes when things are good, we just can't let ourselves be content. We can't just let ourselves enjoy those moments and just let ourselves fully trust in God. We're kind of looking on the outskirts, like what's going to happen that's going to disrupt this? What's going to come in that's going to make this, you know, shake this dream and make me realize things aren't as great as they are? sometimes the good times for us end because we let them end. We let ourselves lose sight of what matters. We let ourselves get worked up and consumed and begin to worry about other things, worry about other people and what they're doing. The verse that I just read, it talks about... I didn't reread that one. There in verse 5, why should I fear in times of trouble when the iniquity of those who cheat me surrounds me? I mean, yeah, that doesn't sound good, right? Those who are cheating you and you're surrounded by iniquity. But sometimes we let our mindset and our trust get shaken at times when really we shouldn't be alarmed. We shouldn't be concerned. And so this psalm reminds us to not fear man, not fear circumstances around us, not fear anything that may come that may change how good things are right now, because we have God. And He's able to do the one thing that does matter above all, and it's what's there in verse 15. He has the power to ransom our soul. I've mentioned one of the Proverbs. I think this psalm, if I were to sum it up, just the very simple message that it's sharing, if you're making notes, you can write down Proverbs 29, verse 25. Proverbs 29, verse 25. The fear of man lays a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is safe. It talks about fear creates a snare. You know, a snare, that's a trap, like, for the future. It's not something that's, like, here and now. But it's saying if we have fear of other people, if we have fear of things that may happen, we've set a snare. We've set ourselves up for failure. We've set ourselves up for that snare, snatching us out of feeling confident, of having faith and confidence in God. And the way to prevent that is what it says there in that proverb and what this entire psalm is about. It's by trusting in God. And so that's the first way. In good times, sometimes we can lose sight of it by being worried about other things. But there's another way that we might sometimes lose sight of it, and that's in Psalm 20. Psalm 20. May the Lord answer you in the day of trouble. May the name of the God of Jacob protect you. May He send you help from the sanctuary and give you support from Zion. May He remember all your offerings and regard with favor your burnt sacrifices. May He grant you your heart's desire and fulfill all of your plans. May we shout for joy over your salvation and in the name of our God set up our banners. May the Lord fulfill all your petitions. Now I know that the Lord saves His anointed. He will answer him from His holy heaven with the saving might of His right hand. Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. They collapse and fall, but we rise and stand upright. O Lord, save the King. May He answer us when we call. So with Psalm 49, what we've talked about is we kind of lose that security and we lose sight of the fact that things are going well because of worry and concern for what might happen. But sometimes what happens is we just get so comfortable in that security. We get so comfortable in those good times. We get complacent. We forget where it came from. We forget that blessing came from God. I mean, that's the repeating story of the nation of Israel, especially in the book of Judges. That's the big cycle we always see and we talk about. They go into hard times, they're being persecuted, God sends a judge, they're delivered. Then they go into the good times and they enjoy that, and they kind of forget God's the one that delivered them in the first place. They get lazy, they start worshiping other idols, and then they fall into bad times and being persecuted and punished again. It's this cycle over and over. We're not immune to that either. And the passage that I'm getting at here in the Psalms is there in verse 7. Some trust in chariots and some in horses. Some trust in possessions. Some trust in the things that we can see. We're not immune to that either. When things are going well, when our bank account's looking good, when we're enjoying life, we may be inclined to sit back. We've got it made. And forget that it was God who did it all in the first place. And so what the writer says here, what David says here, some trust in those things, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. They, that is those who trust in riches and possessions and comfort, they'll collapse and fall. But we, those who trust in the name of the Lord our God, rise and stand upright. So this psalm is here to remind us to trust in God, not in our possessions, not in our circumstances or wealth or comfort, but to only trust in God. And so through these three psalms, I think we're reminded by David and by the sons of Korah that when things are going well, we can't afford to forget God. We can't afford to stop trusting in Him and realizing that's why we have those good things. And when things are going well, we can't allow that security to be shaken on account of fear. Because if we're fearing everything going on around us, do we really trust God? And then finally, as we just read, not trusting in our possessions and physical things, but trusting in God. So all three of these psalms hopefully remind us, trust Him in the good times. Now, before we talk about the second half, trusting God in the difficult times, in the bad times, there's something that I want to make sure that we think on. When we think about trust, when we think about having confidence in God, I think we often jump to what we're about to talk about. When things are difficult, when things are hard, that's when we really need to trust God. That's when we really need to have confidence in God. Which is true, we need to trust and have confidence in God there. But there's an important message from all three of these psalms. And that is, if I were to sum up all of those thoughts and really think through the application, it's this. If we can't remember to trust God in the good times, if we can't remember to trust God and have confidence in Him and to give Him the credit for the things that happen during the good times, how are we ever going to properly trust Him during bad times, during difficult times? And so when we think about trust, we need to think about it in all of those times. That's the passage we open with, trust in the Lord at all times. And so I just want us to be thinking about that. I don't know, you know, each individual person here, what each person's going through, what may be going on in your life. But I would just say, if you look at your life right now and consider it to be a good time, things are going well, take heed, trust in God. Because there may come a time where it's more difficult to trust in God. It's more difficult to remember God. So do it now while times are less difficult and while times are going well. And with that in mind, let's talk about some psalms that show us how to have trust in God during difficult times. If you would, turn to Psalm 44. Psalm 44. O God, we have heard with our ears, our fathers have told us, what deeds you performed in their days, in the days of old. You with your own hand drove out the nations, but them you planted, you afflicted the peoples, but them you set free. For not by their own sword did they win the land, nor did their own arm save them. But your right hand and your arm, and the light of your face, for you delighted in them. You are my king, O God. Ordain salvation for Jacob. Through you we push down our foes. Through your name we tread down those who rise up against us. For not in my bow do I trust, nor can my sword save me. But you have saved us from our foes, and have put to shame those who hate us. In God we have boasted continually, and we will give thanks to your name forever. And I'm going to pause for just a second. Seems out of place so far. He's talking about all the great deeds, all the great things that God has done for the people before them and for them as well. And even this assertion of trust that I've been talking about there in verse 6, we don't trust in our bow and in our sword. Verse 7 says, you have saved us. They trust in God, not in themselves. And they've seen all the great deeds that have been done, and they'll continually boast of God and give thanks. And all of that is true in spite of the second half of the psalm that we're about to read. Verse 9. But you have rejected us and disgraced us, and have not gone out with our armies. You have made us turn back from the foe, and those who hate us have gotten spoiled. You have made us like sheep for slaughter, and have scattered us among the nations. You have sold your people for a trifle, demanding no high price for them. You have made us the taunt of our neighbors, the derision and scorn of those around us. You have made us a byword among the nations, a laughingstock among the people. All day long disgrace is before me, and shame has covered my face. At the sound of the taunter and the reviler, at the sight of the enemy and the avenger, all this has come upon us, though we have not forgotten you, and we have not been false to your covenant. Our heart is not turned back, nor have our steps departed from your way. Yet you have broken us in the place of jackals, and covered us with the shadow of death. If we had forgotten the name of our God, or spread out our hands to a foreign God, would not God discover this? For he knows the secrets of the heart. Yet, for your sake, we are killed all the day long. We are regarded as sheep to be slaughtered. Awake! Why are you sleeping, O Lord? Rouse yourself. Do not reject us forever. Why do you hide your face? Why do you forget our affliction and oppression? For our soul is bowed down to the dust. Our belly clings to the ground. Rise up. Come to our help. Redeem us for the sake of your steadfast love. Now, as this writer noted, sometimes we go into difficult times, hard times, because of our own actions. Perhaps our own sins, in receiving the punishment of that, or receiving the consequences of that. But as it establishes there in verse 17, that's not the case here. They've not forgotten God. They've not broken the covenant. They've not turned their heart away. They've continually followed after God. And yet all these bad things are happening. They look in the past and see God clearly is capable of great things and great deeds and things that He's done for them. And yet here they are suffering. Suffering at the hands of others. Being mocked by others. As it mentions in verse 14, we're a laughingstock and a byword. Disgrace and shame has covered us. I mean, this is not like a bad day. This is a really bad and long enduring circumstance here, that they're a laughingstock and a byword. But they've done nothing wrong. I suspect all of us have been there before, and may well be there now, of suffering and not sure why, feeling pain and not understanding why, perhaps even a laughingstock to others, being mistreated by others and not really knowing why. What do we do in that circumstance? This psalm holds the key, I believe. But one that might make us uncomfortable is there at the end. They just boldly address God. Awake! Why are you sleeping, O Lord? Now, I think we would get really uncomfortable ever suggesting God is sleeping, and that's why these things are happening. God's not paying attention. So why are these things happening? God's hiding His face. He's forgotten. He forgets our affliction. I mean, I think in some respects, if this weren't in the Bible, if we were to just read somebody else say that or hear somebody else say that, we'd go, no. That's not it. God's not doing that. And yet, here we are. One of the Psalms specifically addresses God in that way. There's a reason for that, though. This writer's not doing it out of disrespect. This writer is coming from a place of trust. Remember, all the way back there in verse 6 and in verse 7 and 8, we boast in God continually. We give thanks. This is somebody who's dedicated to God, that boasts in God, that trusts in God and not themselves. And so that's why they have confidence. I can address God very directly and very boldly and ask for God to come and bring deliverance. The point that I really want us to take away here, and it's back to this idea of confusion and uncertainty. When we're suffering and we don't know why, we might be inclined to get passive, to kind of hang back, like, try and figure it out, and not sure, and just kind of, hey God, help this to get better, and so on, and kind of wallow around and not really clear what's going on. But I think what we can learn from this psalm is to look to God boldly. I mean, the New Testament talks about that, boldly approaching the throne of God, boldly going before Him, not because of us, but because of Him. Because we know who He is. We know He loves us. We know He cares, as it says at the very end. Redeem us for the sake of your steadfast love. And so, when we're suffering and we don't know why, that's not the time to get passive. That's not the time to kind of crouch back and not act like we don't really know what to do. That's the time to directly go to God and perhaps say the same types of things that this author does here. We've seen your great deeds in the past. We've seen all the wonderful things we've done. We've trusted in you. Now we're suffering. Help us. Deliver us. Rouse from slumber and come and help us. Do not hide your face. The Psalms are filled with all sorts of statements like this, and we should not be ashamed to ask the same of God. There's another psalm that I think will be helpful when going through difficult times, and that's Psalm 77. This one will go into a little bit more detail on something we saw there in Psalm 44. And that is, we'll read it, but that is, whenever we're in difficult times and suffering, one of the greatest things that we can do is remember what God has done before. And this psalm really talks about that a lot. Psalm 77. I cry aloud to God, and He will hear me. In the day of my trouble, I seek the Lord. In the night, my hand is stretched out without wearying. My soul refuses to be comforted. When I remember God, I moan. When I meditate, my spirit faints. You hold my eyelids open. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. Now, just pausing for a moment again. This is somebody in a very bad place. They have no idea what to do. They've cried aloud to God, wanting Him to hear him. Their soul refuses to be comforted, even when they remember God. There in verse 3, when I remember God, I moan. When I meditate, my spirit faints. In other words, nothing's working. The things that typically you would turn to help make sense of the situation, that you would turn to try and get things back on a better path, none of it's working. And so let's see what this person does next to get back on the right path. Verse 5. I consider the days of old, the years long ago. I said, let me remember my song in the night. Let me meditate in my heart. Then my spirit made a diligent search. For the Lord spurn forever and never again be favorable? Has His steadfast love forever ceased? Are His promises at an end for all time? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has He in anger shut up His compassion? Then I said, I will appeal to this, to the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. I will ponder all your work and meditate on your mighty deeds. Your way, O God, is holy. What God is great like our God? You are the God who works wonders. You have made known your might among the peoples. You with your arm redeemed your people, the children of Jacob and Joseph. When the waters saw you, O God, when the waters saw you, they were afraid. Indeed, the deep trembled. The clouds poured out water. The skies gave forth thunder. Your arrows flashed on every side. The crash of your thunder was in the whirlwind. Your lightnings lighted up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Your way was through the sea, your path through the great waters, yet your footprints were unseen. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. This person, in their suffering, in grief, and not having a clue what to do, they said, let's remember the things God's done. Let's remember what He's done in the past. There in verse 11, I'll remember your wonders of old. Now, there's an important thing I want us to notice here. The things that this writer, that Asaph, is talking about, the good things that God has done, the mighty deeds that He's done, is he remembering deeds that God did for him? Or is he remembering deeds that God did in long centuries past? I think it's the second. He talks about He redeemed His people, the children of Jacob and Joseph. There in verse 20, you led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. And even aside from all that, all these other things, the clouds and the thunder and the crashing and the earth shaking, none of that, not one of those things was anything done personally for Asaph, and most of which he's referring to, if not all of it, he didn't even see. He didn't even experience. He didn't experience any of those good things he's talking about. And yet, that is still what he chooses to do in order to be comforted. In order to find peace and in order to find security, it's remembering what God has done in the past. And we should do the same as well. It may well be, just like Asaph, we're in a situation and suffering so much, we have no idea what to do. And it may not even be possible at that exact moment in time to look at your own life and say, well, God did this for me, and God did that for me, and these great things happened. We might be in such a state of mind, we can't even really think about that right then, right? But we can think, what has God done for others? What has God done even in the distant past? Even this very psalm, we can read and be reminded of what God has done. And remembering all of that, the context of it is what I'd read there in verses 8 and 9. Has His steadfast love forever ceased? Are His promises at an end for all time? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has He in anger shut up His compassion? Those are all rhetorical questions. The answer to those is no. God is not forgotten. And sometimes the way to remember that, sometimes the way to remember that God's steadfast love is still there and His promises are still there, they lie beyond our own lives. They lie in the lives of others, seeing what God has done for them. And we can look and have confidence. God did that for people who trusted in Him. We may not know how, but God can do those same things and deliver us who trust in Him as well. And so this psalm can be a great reminder that even no matter how difficult things may be, we can still trust in God because we can look and see what He has done in the past. The final psalm from this section I want us to look at is Psalm 22. This is somewhat of a lengthy one, so we'll mostly only read the second half. But just to kind of establish some context here, this psalm will probably be very familiar to us. This is one that was written by David, and in many ways is prophetic concerning Jesus. And yet, as with many of David's psalms, they were also about himself. I don't think what's going on here is David went into some sort of prophetic trance and wrote down a psalm that he didn't understand. That was just about Jesus. David understood these feelings as well. David suffered greatly at many times in his life and knew what it was like to feel forsaken. There in verse 1, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but I find no rest. We see moments in David's life where he felt that way. So the point is, while this is prophetic of Jesus in many respects, it was still something that David was feeling and could relate to. And I want us to jump ahead. We'll begin reading in verse 19 in just a moment. But the verses that I didn't read just really enumerate all of the sufferings. I mean, he's in a really bad place. They're being surrounded by evildoers. I mean, again, if we think about the prophecy, I mean, the comparison here is Jesus nailed on the cross and people casting lots for his garments. I mean, you can't really imagine much of a worse place to be. That's the type of things that this psalm is talking about. And the key with this psalm, what we've talked about just the last couple of psalms, is when we're in difficult times, we look to God anyways, and we look to the past. But actually what we're going to look in this psalm is looking to the future. Maybe the present, looking at the present, can be too difficult. Looking at the present and the suffering and the difficulties might be too much to take in at that moment. But we'll see from this psalm, looking to the future can also contain the answer. Verse 19. But you, O Lord, do not be far off. O you, my help, come quickly to my aid. Deliver my soul from the sword, my precious life from the power of the dog. Save me from the mouth of the lion. You have rescued me from the horns of the wild oxen. I will tell of your name to my brothers. In the midst of the congregation, I will praise you. You who fear the Lord, praise Him. All you offspring of Jacob, glorify Him, and stand in awe of Him, all you offspring of Israel. For He has not despised or abhorred the affliction of the affliction, or the affliction of the afflicted. And He has not hidden His face from him, but has heard when he cried to Him. From you comes my praise in the great congregation. My vows I will perform before those who fear Him. The afflicted shall eat and be satisfied. Those who seek Him shall praise the Lord. May your hearts live forever. All the ends of the earth shall remember and turn to the Lord, and all the families of the nation shall worship before you. For kingship belongs to the Lord, and he rules over the nations. All the prosperous of the earth eat and worship. Before him shall bow down who go down to the dust, shall bow all who go down to the dust, even the one who could not keep himself alive. Posterity shall serve him. It shall be told of the Lord to the coming generation. They shall come and proclaim his righteousness to a people yet unborn, that he has done it. That's a dramatic shift in tone. The first half that talked about and kind of summarized just absolute misery and pain and suffering and being surrounded by wickedness. But then in verse 22, I will tell of your name to my brothers. In the midst of the congregation, I will praise you. What's going on here? He's looking to the future and saying these things are going to happen. Now, there was just a brief moment there in verse 19 and 20 of asking God, come save me, come deliver me. But it was just a couple verses. And then the rest of this psalm all shifts to saying, here's what's going to happen in the future. Here's what I'm going to do in the future. And you notice the way that we know that he was confident in that is he doesn't say, I will tell of your name to my brothers once you save me. In the midst of the congregation, I will praise you when I get out of this situation. Or I'll do all these things after you've delivered me. No, this writer is confident. That's going to happen. Period. There's going to be a future where I'm in the congregation praising. Where I'm telling of his name to his brothers. Where I'll be satisfied. Where all of these great things are going to happen and I'll be prosperous. Do you get any sense of doubt in David's mind that those things are going to happen? No. And so we too should have that level of trust that whatever's going on, whatever we might be suffering, we might not know how that situation is going to resolve. We might not know if it's even going to get resolved for the better or for the worse. We don't know. But we should have the confidence that David had that whatever might happen in the present, there is a future that will be great. There is a future where we will praise God. There is a future where we will be blessed. That's the type of trust we should have in God. And that's the type of trust we can have in God. Knowing that whatever happens here and now, there's a future where things will be great, where we will be blessed by God. And so these three psalms remind us of that. When we're suffering, we look to God. We look to the past and the great things He's done, and we look to the future, knowing the great things that He will do. Maybe the present is too hard to look upon, to really grasp, to understand. But all of these psalms still show us the answer is still there to be found in God. In closing, I want us to turn back to Psalm 62. I think this psalm is a great summary of all the things that we've been talking about. And so let's read it together. Psalm 62. For God alone my soul waits in silence. From Him comes my salvation. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be greatly shaken. How long will all of you attack a man to batter him like a leaning wall, a tottering fence? They only plan to thrust him down from his high position. They take pleasure in falsehood. They bless with their mouths, but inwardly they curse. For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence, for my hope is from Him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be shaken. On God rest my salvation and my glory, my mighty rock, my refuge is God. Trust in Him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before Him. God is a refuge for us. Those of low estate are but a breath. Those of high estate are a delusion. In the balances they go up, they are together lighter than a breath. Put no trust in extortion, set no vain hopes on robbery. If riches increase, set not your heart on them. Once God has spoken, twice have I heard this, that power belongs to God, and that to you, O Lord, belongs steadfast love. For you will render to a man according to his work. This psalm, like the other psalms, There's absolute faith, absolute confidence, and absolute trust in God, in referring to Him as His rock, His fortress, His salvation, His refuge, His glory, all of these other things. David was the man, as was written by David, David was the man who knew hardship, and David knew suffering, and knew difficulty, and knew what it was like to feel cut off from God. Whether it was the doing of others, such as Saul, or Absalom, or others who persecuted him, or even his own doing, in the case of what he did with Bathsheba and her husband, Uriah. He knew what it was like. And yet in all of those things, this psalm, I think, best sums up how he approached those situations and how we should approach those situations as well. Trust in Him at all times. And that's the encouragement I leave with us. Trust in Him at all times. Don't shy away from God. Whether it's good times or bad times, God's got to be part of the equation. God's got to be there. And it says in verse 8, we have to pour out our heart to Him. Whatever we're going through, for suffering, pour it out to God. Trust in Him. Have faith in Him. And if things are going great, give God praise. Trust in Him and have confidence in Him. I hope that's a helpful message for us to consider from these psalms. There's many other psalms we could look at that share very similar messages. But the whole point of all this is just uncertainty is around us. Like I said in the beginning, the whole premise behind this series that I did, and this is just one lesson of it, was back in 2020. And all the uncertainties and confusions related to COVID and other things. But that continues on today, confusion and uncertainty over other things. And it was true for Pilate 2,000 years ago and true for David many hundreds of years before that. The constant in all of that is to trust in God and have confidence in Him no matter what's around us. Wherever you may be in your life at this time, wherever you may stand with relation to God, if you're one of His children, or if you're not, give thought to your standing with God. Do you truly have trust and have confidence in Him? If you're not one of His children, then you need to change that so that you can have that same trust and confidence. We all need to be aware, as it says at the very end of that psalm, God will render to a man according to his work. And that's true for those of us who are Christians, and if we've fallen away and started to sin, God will render to us on account of the things that we do. Let's make sure we're in the right standing with God so that we can truly feel the blessing of trust and confidence in Him. And if there's anything we can do to help you at this time to become one of His children or to repent of sins and just even receive encouragement in prayers, let's know what we can do for you by coming forward as we stand and sing together.